Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Holy moly, it's July 4th. Saturday, July 4th. I'm not sure I've ever had a show actually fall on July 4th. And I must say, I'm actually getting this done later than normal because I wanted to see what was unfolding with events over in South Dakota with the president's speech and Mount Rushmore, etc. But I am pleased and honored to be bringing the show to you this July 4th. And we have a bunch of stuff to cover. I'm going to try and keep it short. I know several of the AM stations have programming that they have planned for July 4th. So that won't break their hearts. And we all have things to do over this July 4th weekend. We have done a boatload of work on the ranch over the last week or so. We have hay bales down everywhere, which is rather nice in this dry year. One field, in fact, our pivot field, actually set a record this year for the most hay, although all other fields are down about 35%. So maybe the record will offset the deficit, you know? Yeah. As they say in construction, cut and fill to come out with the proper burden. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of things. We're going to be talking about reparations. I was the first one to tell you about reparations 5 years ago. People laughed at me. And here we are. Not only are here we are, but here we really are. And I'll explain to you. And we're going to be talking about, our friend Dr. Fauci and his clandestine cabal of globalists and medical malpractice folks, because that's what he is. He's a medical malpractice, Dr. Fauci is. I'll explain to you. In fact, it'll curl your hair. You know, in the end, it's all about money and power. And this coronavirus is about money and power, whether it's money and power for China or it's money and power for Fauci and his globalist cabal, Gates, Soros, Clinton, you name it, or money and power for the commie Dems. It's all about money and power, and you will see, it will become crystal clear to you this morning what's going on. We're going to talk about communications. I don't know if you know, but there were three sites, websites, social media sites, gathering and conversation and information sites that quote-unquote censured President Trump this last week. I mean, you know the censoring is going on at Facebook, and you know it's going on at Google. I mean, they've told you. Project Veritas, and Bing this up and watch the videos. Project Veritas has gone underground, has videos of Facebook employees and employees from Google admitting that they are purposely tampering with this election via information feeds, elevating the news they want people to see, greatly depressing the news they don't want them to see, and basically cutting off communications between conservatives and between conservatives and the Trump administration. I'll explain to you more as the show unfolds. We're going to be talking about China, because China is up to its antics, and of course, the press is not covering squat, because the press is obsessed with the quote-unquote protests. You know, those peaceful protests that are breaking store windows, burning cities down, taking over city halls, taking over city blocks. Those peaceful protests. By the way, we actually had the capital of a major city fall to anarchists over the last 48 hours. Literally, they now run City Hall. More about that also. And we're going to be talking about demographics and the upcoming election. Not only demographics in terms of age, but demographics in terms of skin color. And that ties right into education. Because there's some, if you think the education system is bad now, and you can see the spawn of the education system we allowed the progressives to control over the last 40 years in the streets throwing Molotov cocktails, you just wait. If you don't get involved in this, if you don't get involved with your school board, if you don't get your kids, you know, let's say you are, should we say, older, your kids have flown the coop, they're having their own kids, get your kids involved to save their kids. We have lots to go over, and it's kind of perfect for July 4th. And of course, we have our historical story, which is like right on point. Not only right on point for July 4th, but right on point for what's going on this July 4th. So let's get started. It's back in June of 1776. You know, in April, the battles of Concord and Lexington. British regulars had marched to capture several of the quote-unquote rebel leaders, the colonial upstarts, and to capture and destroy caches of ammunition and muskets at Concord and Lexington. And of course, their advance was forewarned by Paul Revere, who has an interesting historical sidelight, was actually captured during his ride. And the real alarm was by a guy who was riding with Paul Revere by the name of Dawes. A little historical footnote for you. And on that morning, April 19th, 1776, a ragtag line of colonial patriots stood and blocked the British advance on the commons of Concord and at the Lexington Bridge. And you know the story. The British fired first. One does not know exactly why. Concord, several men were lost and wounded. There were 8 men lost and wounded, including a black man, believe it or not, who was standing with with the colonists at Lexington. And the British advanced. The stores had been moved. The colonial leaders, including Sam Adams, had been moved safely because of the warning from Dawes. And on the way back to Boston, thousands of colonial patriots. The first American army gathered impromptu, without plan, and bushwhacked the British troops all the way along their bloody road back to Boston. The British lost hundreds of men and hundreds more wounded. It was a total disaster for them. And the colonials took up positions, of course, on Bunker Hill and Breed's Hill, overlooking Boston Harbor, which would later result in the Battle of Bunker Hill. But I digress. These sets of events in April, May, and June of 1776 set in motion, number one, the formalization of the colonial Congress, the 13 original colonies, each had delegates. And it also set in motion the drafting of the Declaration of Independence. The drafting of the Declaration of Independence was by Thomas Jefferson. And although most people don't know it, there was actually a committee of 6. And there was many different people, some from the southern colonies, some from the northern colonies. I mean, it was a rather diverse, in that day's parlance, a rather diverse group of colonial drafters, shall we say. But the initial draft was written by Jefferson. And what's really interesting is that Jefferson was anti-slavery. He really, really wrestled with slavery. He owned slaves himself at that time, and they were necessary to his family economics. But he hated the concept of slavery. He hated feeling that he owned another human being. And there were over 86 edits made by this committee to Jefferson's initial draft of the Constitution, which he submitted to the Congressional Congress, by the way, in about mid-June. Nobody knows the exact date. Mid-June of 1776. And in his initial draft, basically Jefferson cried out for freedom for slaves and blamed the slave trade on Great Britain, which to some extent was quite true. But that is a story for another day. One of the provisions that he drafted in there that was later expunged and replaced was, quote, he, meaning the king, King George, he has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. That was struck, that paragraph. And the reason it was struck is that the colonies knew that they didn't have a whole big chance of winning this insurrection. There were doubts in all the Congress members' minds, but they knew that to stand on principle, they had to. And to stand on principle, they had to unite. You know, do you ever see that movie Braveheart? You know, where Wallace turns to the king apparent of the at that time satellite nation of Scotland and says, "Unite us, unite us." Well, the colonies knew they didn't have a chance against world's greatest power unless they were united. And this was probably the first example of sausage making, shall we say, in the government of the fledgling United States. We have seen sausage making since then, and it's ugly. The southern colonies, of course, were adamant slaveholders. The northern colonies, not so much. The compromise that was made was that slavery itself would not be mentioned, nor would slavery be blamed or excised in the draft of the Constitution that was going to be written or going to be finalized. But slavery would be mentioned obliquely. And Thomas Jefferson's original rough draft, as he called it, D-R-A-U-G-H-T, or the rough draft, as we would call it today, written in June of 1776, had dozens of edits. Benjamin Franklin edited it. John Adams edited it. The Library of Congress, for those of you who are interested, and it's really kind of fascinating, has high-resolution microfilm scans of the document online. You can actually see the hand, you know, the whole document was handwritten. But you can see all the edits, the actual edits to what became the Declaration of Independence. The committee to draft the Declaration of Independence was appointed June 11th, 1776. And the committee included Jefferson, Franklin, Adams, along with a guy by the name of Roger Sherman and Robert Livingston. Jefferson, by the way, had previously drafted the Virginia Constitution in May of 1776. And that Constitution, the Constitution of Virginia, even though they have forsaken it and forgotten it in the last few years, heavily influenced the drafting of the Declaration of Independence for the United Colonies. There were 86 changes made by the committee to the initial manuscript. And one of the edits, besides the removal of this paragraph that I just read to you, added the iconic phrase, "We hold these truths to be self-evident," which, by the way, originally read, "We hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable." And the final draft's line, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, those are the words that that Joe Biden can't remember. It was initially wordier. It had a phrase in there that said that from that equal creation they derive in rights inherent and inalienable, among which are the preservation of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Why do I bring this up? I bring this up because even at the inception of America, even, by the way, the final draft of the Declaration of Independence was adopted by the congressional action of July 2nd and made official July 4th, 1776, which is exactly 240 years ago today. So the bottom line of this is, folks, there were men in the Congressional Congress who struggled with the concept of slavery at the time the Declaration was written. The Declaration was a result of sausage making, just like you see on a much grander and more corrupt scale today. And the final draft of the Declaration of Independence, it was Jefferson who got that famous, iconic line that is so often quoted in there. And he put it in there, and he changed it, and he focused it, because his original paragraph that had to do with slavery, Britain being to blame, slavery, really, if you read his words carefully, to be abolished, had to be dropped to create a unity amongst the 13 colonies if they had a prayer of wresting independence from the British Empire. Very interesting. And it is those words, that Jefferson finally got in after much manipulation, massaging, and editing to the Declaration of Independence, which formed the basis, as Jefferson intended, folks. This is really important. He intended that wording, which he fought for. He intended that wording to be the basis upon which slavery would be abolished. And by the way, of course, the morons now are tearing down his statue. He is really the father of emancipation. Lincoln, who used those words and used that portion, which flows over to the Constitution, used it as the basis for his Emancipation Proclamation. Okay, it all flows from Jefferson to Lincoln. And of course, Lincoln is under attack too. You know, his statues are no good. When you know this little historical fact, that's our historical story for today, because it's really kind of fascinating, particularly with quote-unquote Black Lives Matter. Actually, you know, they should change their name to No Lives Matter. That would be much more accurate. You know, it's improper. I mean, you can get fired. People have been fired for saying All Lives Matter. Professors, all sorts of people. I mean, if you say All Lives Matter, that's blasphemy right now. But I think the proper name for Black Lives Matter is No Lives Matter. In fact, that might be the proper name for the entire Democratic Communist Party, which is exactly what it is. Let's get into our show, shall we? Let's get into our show. Let's talk about Black Lives Matter. So, you know, that poor guy who was killed by a knee to his neck, never mind his background, which is rather sordid. Nobody deserves that. That cop is, you know, something's not right with the guy, obviously. But George Floyd, the guy that was killed, is being used as the cloak for everything that's going on right now. Let me tell you that if George Floyd hadn't died, some other symbol would have been used, because all these protests, folks, are planned. They were planned for right now, at this time, in front of this election. They were planned in concert with foreign powers, particularly China, the certain elements of the Democratic Communist Party, and certain elements of Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the dark, shadowy puppeteers, billionaire puppeteers that pull the puppet strings of all these groups and all these actions, and who finance them, I might add. Although Black Lives Matter, as I talked about over the last two shows, has gotten $480 million from corporate America. I mean, wow. I guess they're paying ransom. Ransom to say, don't target me. You know, don't bring me up. Leave me alone. Here's some money. Go away. And of course, the opposite will be true. Because should the Democrats, Democratic Communists, gain power this November, or if and when they gain power, and by gaining power, I'm talking about owning the House, owning the Senate, and owning the White House, these companies are going to be among the first to get their little necks chopped off. In fact, all companies, all business, all capitalistic enterprises will be cut off at the head or strangled, either slowly or quickly, depending upon the outcry. The outcry, of course, is us, you and me, and people who believe in American values and capitalism. If we allow it to happen, it will happen quickly. Black Lives Matter has set out a list of demands. They vary a little bit city to city, but there is a list of demands on their website. And they all boil down to money and power, folks. Let me make this really clear. The Democratic Communists, of whatever stripe or color or creed, they don't have a religion, so that doesn't matter, and the folks that run Black Lives Matter, they want your property. That is really what this is about. They want to control what you think, what you say, what you communicate, and they want what you have. This really boils down to not a battle, as they have tried to cast it, between white and brown-skinned people. I mean, that's just an emotional rallying cry to cloak their true intentions. This is really a battle between haves and have-nots. Interestingly, the folks that lead the have-nots are haves. I mean, most of the people who lead these movements either came from well-to-do families or came from very poor families, but, shall we say, have managed to enrich themselves along the way of leading these movements. Take a look at Al Sharpton. Take a look at Jesse Jackson. I mean, you know, these original race baiters. And the race baiting covers the true intentions. So let me tell you some of the demands of Black Lives Matter. And I think this will put away forever any concept you have, any vestige of guilt you have over this whole black, white, white privilege, slavery, etc. This is this is a Black Lives Matter leader from Louisville, Kentucky, which, by the way, has had a host of problems. We'll talk about that later in the show. He has a 10-point list of demands. It kind of mirrors the national branch, and it mirrors some of the other city branches of Black Lives Matter, but it's rather interesting. Number one, white people, if you don't have any descendants, will your property to a black or brown family, preferably one that lives in generational poverty. Number two, white people, if you're inheriting property you intend to sell upon acceptance, give it to a black or brown family. You're bound to make that money in some other white privileged way. I'm actually reading the demands, folks. Number three, if you are a developer or realty owner of multifamily housing, build a sustainable complex in a black or brown blighted neighborhood and let black and brown people live in it for free. Number four, white people, if you can afford to downsize, give up the home you own to a black or brown family, preferably a family from generational poverty. White people, this is number five, white people, if any of the people you intend to leave your property to are racist assholes, change the will and will your property to a black or brown family, preferably a family from generational poverty. Number six, white people, rebudget your monthly so you can donate to black funds for land purchasing. This is number seven, white people, especially white women, because this is your all specialty, nosy Jenny and meddling Kathy, get a racist fired. You know what the you know what the F they should be saying. You are complicit when you ignore them. Get your boss fired because they racist too. Yeah. And then he mentions little D with three letters after it, white men. Number eight. Backing up number seven, this should be easy, but all those sheetless Klan Nazis and other lil D, three followed by three letters, white men, will all be returning to work. Get their ass fired. Call the police, even if they look suspicious. Number nine. Okay, backing up number eight, if any white person at your work, or as you enter in spaces and you overhear a white person praising the actions from yesterday, first, get a pic. Get their name and more info. Hell, find out where they work. Get them fired, but certainly address them. And if you need to, you got hands, use them. Kind of a call to violence. And number 10, commit to two things. Fighting white supremacy where and how you can. This doesn't mean taking up knitting unless you're making scarves for black women. Those are the those are the demands of the Kentucky chapter of Black Lives Matter, which, by the way, although they are more well worded on the national site, mirror the demands on the national site. You might want to go to the Black Lives Matter site when you have a chance and read it for yourself. Read the demands and read the preamble on the Black Lives Matter site. I think you'll find it rather, I wouldn't say scintillating, but why don't we say edifying? How's that? You know, all this, folks, did you see the theme in those demands? The theme in those demands was, we want what you got. Okay? Now, it's cast in white and black terms, but it could be yellow, red, green, Martian, it doesn't matter. Basically, the have-nots of the planet want what the haves have. That's one of the reasons ransom money is being paid by these big corporations. That's one of the reasons the NFL And we're going to talk a little bit about this. In a disgusting series of decisions, is bowing down on one knee to this whole really quite illegitimate No Lives Matter movement. I mean, it's astounding. And this would best be summed up by, and you'll see it, by the way, I believe the video of her whole little tirade is right under the audio bar on the website, on therightsideradio.com. And you should listen to it for yourself, because I can't impart the venom, the hatred, and the disingenuous tone of Sheila Jackson, a Congress lady, of Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat of Texas, her rant. But I will give you some, so I'm going to lift it out. Now that you've listened to their 10 demands, and they really are very similar, it doesn't matter, city to city, state to state, each one might have a few separate different things, but this is the demands from the No Lives Matter group. Okay, Sheila Jackson Lee was instrumental in getting together the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act. It has 131 Democratic co-sponsors in the House. And that act establishes a committee, quote, to examine slavery and discrimination in the colonies and the United States from 1619 to the present, and recommend appropriate remedies, unquote. And of course, Jackson Lee has connected her bill to the death of George Floyd. Okay? I mean, how convenient for the... If it wasn't George Floyd, trust me, folks, it would have been somebody else, something else. This was planned to happen, and it's been planned for a long time. Last week, I told you about these people beginning to get together, seriously organizing, seriously beginning to raise funds within a week of Trump's inauguration in 2016. You don't think this was planned for right now in 2020? Well, then you are foolish. I'll be nice and say you're foolish. Let me continue with some of Jackson Lee's rather incredible rant. Quote, the American government still owes a debt. By the way, she's backed completely by the Congressional Black Caucus. Quote, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act is the answer to the original sin. It is, in fact, a restorative and repair approach to the extreme disparities that rendered and exhibited the horrors of the killing and the murder of my former constituent, George Floyd. Unquote. Quote, fundamental injustice and humanity of slavery has never been answered, unquote. And then, folks, for the first time, you get some of the logic behind what they're going to use, or what they hope to use as a foundation for reparations. And reparations, let's just call it what it is. It's a redistribution of wealth from people who have it to people who don't, period. If you think it's just going to be white folks who have money or property, you're wrong. It's about money, property, and power. Color is just a cloak. It's an invisibility cloak. It is the Harry Potter invisibility cloak of the alt-left, the Islamist left, and the No Lives Matter portion of the alt-left. Here is the rationale, which is right now just emerging. And by the way, in sync with the media, I'll explain in just a minute. Quote, the key question here, this is Sheila Jackson Lee, is that as slaves were freed, there was no tangible wealth given for their work of over 200 years, i.e. 1619, folks. That the lack of wealth reflected in the anger and anguish of those who received them, that led into a broken reconstruction, Jim Crowism, 4,000 African Americans lynched, and then a period of attempted civil rights and the loss of civil rights battlers. She's alluding to Martin Luther King. And then a period of attempted civil rights and the loss of civil rights battlers, in essence, on the civil rights battlefield. In other words, this is her subtle call to action. The battlefield now is the streets of America's major cities. Do you kind of see how this all, it's diabolically clever, and it is darkly evil. Diabolically clever and darkly evil. Let me continue. Quote, affirmative action is now being attacked. Now we come to a point of enormous disparities in health care and the idea of wealth, the idea of education, the idea of disparities in youth and housing and the justice system. And of course the argument is that why would folks who are, regrettably, five or six generations ago, their family was in slavery. Why would they be entitled to reparations now? And of course, on the flip side of the coin, why would folks of any color, including white, who, you know, that's kind of their, that's their cap bleu, you know, that's their siren call, but particularly white people, who are five or six generations removed from slaveholders, or in the huge majority of cases in the United States, their family tree, their ancestry, has nothing to do with slaves, never owned slaves. Why should they have to pay now, in the year 2020? Here's her answer. This 13-member commission, established by the federal government, answers the question that is not the individual act of holding slaves. It is the government sanction that denied African Americans their equality. She's talking, folks, believe it or not, about that paragraph that was taken out of the Declaration of Independence, and then Jefferson substituted a more general paragraph eventually used to end slavery. But she's talking about the elimination of that paragraph I read you in this historical story. It is a government sanction that denied African Americans their equality, and as well the government's responsibility to design the responses to the continued death, murder, and inequities in our community. This is America's responsibility to pay. The American government's responsibility to pay her debt. Now, listen, if it's being paid by the government, then it's coming from all taxpayers, right? Last time I checked, taxpayers are of every stripe, color, creed, religion, origin, you name it. They are black, brown, yellow, red, from Mars, if you're, I guess if you're a taxpayer in New York, it's from anywhere in the universe, and you're taxed. Now, exactly how are they going to, how are they going to do this? Are they going to have a law that basically says only white people pay this tax? Well, that's obviously unconstitutional. That'd probably be a 9-0 vote at even the split Supreme Court we have now. Think about some of the things that they want to do if they obtain power. They want to expand and jack the Supreme Court. You know, they want to load the court with liberal justices. What are those liberal justices going to do? Well, they're going to do a lot of things, but one of the things they're going to do is suddenly it's not going to be unconstitutional to unequally apply tax based on the color of your skin. Do you kind of see how all this is tied in together? I mean, whoever has diabolically put this together, and it's really think tanks paid for by George Soros and others like him, I hate to admit it, but they are diabolically clever. I mean, they have thought of every loose end here. And they're relying on the media, and they're relying on big tech in today's day and age to help them get there. That's going to be my next segment. That, boy, it's going to really tie in for you. So that is what Jackson Lee is saying. Basically, reparations, I mean, you know, you can't just come out and say, listen, you're a white guy, like they did in South Africa, right? And I did a whole show on that, by the way. Let me digress. I've done shows on this reparations thing. Type reparations in the search bar. Listen to those shows. Okay, there is right now as we speak, a genocide going on of white property owners in South Africa, and their properties are being taken and redistributed to black voters. Basically, the votes of the government in power in South Africa, this is the same thing that happened, by the way, in Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, etc., are being purchased by the properties of anybody who is non-black. Anybody. If you're brown, you're going to give up your property. This is such a big scam. Such a huge scam. And this is where, basically, they are adopting the South African model. But they have to go through the steps to get there. You kind of follow what I'm talking about. Take all these dots of what they said they want to do. Stack the Supreme Court. You know, do this, do that. Pass legislation. Disarm the public. Because, obviously, the public can't fight and defend their property that's being taken. This is all tied in, folks. None of this is operating independently at all. Not even close. Not even close. And what they've done, okay, is, and this is kind of the truth of what's happening in the world. They created a virus, and by they, I'm talking about the globalists, many of them with different reasons, but in the end, the same goal. The Communist Party of China, who has an overt goal, which is to dominate the planet in every way, shape, or form. And to do that, go back to my February 22nd show, listen to it from their own lips. To do that, they have to eliminate the United States, because it's the only thing that stands in their way. Use this virus, play it up. This is going to go right into my the second segment I'm going to be going over with you here. Count the number of dead every second of every day, in every news headline. Close all the businesses. Put 40 million people, just in the United States, out of work. Remove entertainment, any diversion. Parks, gyms, bars, restaurants, sports. No dating, no touching. Mass people. Dehumanize them. Close temples and churches. Create a vacuum, which, of course, mainstream media is only all too eager to fill with all the aforementioned type news. Create depression, anxiety, and desperation. And then, using all that potpourri of nastiness as kindling, ignite hatred, ignite a civil war, ignite civil conflict, ignite civil rest. And by the way, you know, use the virus as an excuse to empty prisons and fill the streets with criminals. At the same time, you're trying to disarm the population so they can't defend themselves and disband their police force, which kind of is, to use that phrase, the thin blue line between society and anarchy. And you have adversarial governments that are in the thick and thin of this. Wait till I get into a segment on China. Actually sending, shall we say, underground arms. That is right. Automatic and semi-automatic parts for weapons to Black Lives Matter. Yeah, that's actually going on, folks. Of course, we knew it, but now we really know it because they just interdicted a shipment, shall we say. Okay, attack law enforcement. Have government issue stand down orders so that people can run amok. And allow China, Iran, Russia to get their sticky little fingers in it, while at the same time you decry any foreign influence and accuse the President of the United States, who has now been four times cleared, of exactly the foreign interference that you yourself are stoking, welcoming, and concealing. It's really rather diabolical. That's what it is. So there is, to get this done, to get all this done, you have communications on many different levels, between people, between families, between like-thinking groups, whether it's liberals or whether it's conservatives, whether it's blacks or whether it's whites, whether it's this religion, that religion, or whatever. You know, you have kind of meeting places, congregating places for the distribution and dissemination and discussion of information. If you can control this flow of information, if you can limit the interaction with people, between people of like thinking, between people who think a certain way or are on the fence and their leaders, then you are a long way toward controlling the message. And the message is about perception. I've said this many times. Okay, words create perception. Perception creates thought. Thought leads to ideas, and ideas lead to action. We're going to talk about Fauci, because all of this is mixed in with misinformation, fake news, subterfuge, and outright falsehoods. And Fauci has been on full display. I can't stand the man. He's a quack whose license should be removed. He is an anti-American globalist. He is an anti-American citizen of the world. And it's all about Fauci. And it's all about the masters that he serves. And I'm going to give you some examples here. You have a press that is incessantly coming up with negative stories about America, Americans, race, the president, the president's agenda, the Supreme Court, any and all conservative institutions, and of course, history. Right? The touchstone of the past is the guidepost of the future, which is why the touchstone is under attack. This is one of the first things that a totalitarian left regime does. Study the history of any of the great leftist dictatorships of the last 200 years, since Karl Marx wrote his manifesto, and a professor whose name is Vin, did his manifesto in 1980, which is now kind of like a really cool thing to read if you're in college, you know. When the social media shuts down the president, whether it's Twitter or whether it's Twitch or whether it's Reddit, which all happened in the last week, the leader can't talk to his followers and those on the fence. When churches are shut down under the guise of a quote-unquote pandemic based on a series of false models and lies, then people in churches can't talk to one another. People in businesses can't talk. Business owners of businesses which are shut down can't attend their meetings. Do you see how they stifle information and stifle communications between every single level of what they consider to be the opposition? In this case, the opposition, folks, is you and me. The opposition is Americans who believe that everybody, all Americans, black, white, yellow, red, doesn't matter, are Americans. Americans are people who believe in July 4th, which, by the way, there's actual talk about abolishing July 4th. But I'll save that for another show. This is in concert with a directed pattern of communication on the only open channels that reach everyone that still exist. That is your mainstream media, your CNN, your MSNBC, your ABCs, your APs. Okay? They're not being screwed with by the tech giants. They're not being banned from social media platforms. Their gatherings, whether they are quote-unquote peaceful protests, riots, what have you, are not only not banned, they are extolled. On one hand, of course, you have the same, shall we say, controlling parties of communication, broadcasting how irresponsible it is for the president to have 7,500 people gathered at Mount Rushmore without masks, while at the same time they're extolling the virtues of hundreds of thousands of people marching in the streets of New York and 30, 40, 50 other major cities. I mean, obviously, anybody with a brain can see what's going on here. Okay, and it's based on lies, because they control the communication. They can control the communication to the mass public. They control the communication, i.e., they carry what some leaders say, like Pelosi, but not what other leaders say, like red state governors or Trump. They allow the left to indiscriminately and completely dominate social media while they suppress and tamper with any social media of conservatives. They allow the left to gather in all their sordid little ways while they shut down, we'll call it the right, in every single which way. This is intentional. This is planned. This is on purpose. This is a vast conspiracy to deprive you of your rights and properties and to take down America as you know it. The fundamental transformation of America, as our friend Barry said in 2008, 2009. And by the way, that guy was the fuse to the powder keg we are sitting on. Do not underestimate how evil, dark, and complete anti-American his influence has been. Without Barack Obama, you would not see happening what is happening right now. Let's take a look at just some of the fake news, shall we? That revolves around this contrived and manufactured virus. I've told you in previous shows, there's been numerous studies. The private and the university studies, hardly by right-wing universities, Princeton, Harvard, USC, basically say that the known cases are a fraction of the actual cases of COVID. Their studies say that known cases, well, real cases, actual cases of COVID are 22x to 84x. I went over this last week. Even the CDC now a week ago came out with, and I talked about it on last week's show, so I'm not going to repeat it, 10x, which lowers the death rate using the CDC, most conservative numbers, to 0.00435%. The death rate for seasonal flu is 0.013%. 3%, 3 times higher than COVID. Yet we are now watching, because of this control of communication too, and control of communication of every other shape or form to isolate the message that I was just talking about, we are now seeing the entire focus of the media on this second wave of coronavirus and how many cases there are a day. Now look, I want you to use your head here, okay? When they say there's 50,000 new cases yesterday, let's say, I'm just taking a number in the general range. Do you notice that there's never a breakdown of what those new cases are? Oh, maybe in some general terms. Most of these cases seem to be 35 and under. But other than that, do you ever see a breakdown? For instance, do you know how many of these cases that are classified as new cases, how many of these cases are cases which involve people who have already had the virus and have antibodies? No, that information isn't out there. Do you see an actual age breakdown of people who are quote-unquote new cases? No, you don't see that information out there. Do you see any correlation or any type of statistics whatsoever which talk about new cases relative to new hospitalizations relative to deaths? No, you don't see that out there. Of course, there's not much to report when your death rate's 0.00435%. This is intentional, folks. Fauci, over the last week, okay, he warned that, and this was a week ago Sunday, or a week ago tomorrow, quote, it's unlikely the U.S. will achieve herd immunity to the coronavirus if a portion of the population refuses to get a coronavirus vaccine. In that same interview and series of interviews, he admits that the vaccine will only be about 75% effective. Really? Wow. I thought 4 months ago, like, we had to shut down until we had a vaccine because that would solve it. Now we're being told a vaccine's only going to be 75% effective. And we're told that if everybody doesn't get it, to achieve the 75% effective rate, because everybody has gotten the vaccine, that it won't be effective at all. We won't have herd immunity. In other words, we're going to continue to all die, to wither away, to tip over in the street. This, of course, is completely contrary to other statements he and his ilk have made. At the Aspen Ideas Festival last week, Fauci said, quote, he would settle for a coronavirus that is between 70 and 75% effective, because that would bring you to that level that would be the herd immunity level. You know, there's another way to get there, folks. And that is 60 to 70% of the population get coronavirus. Guess what? In the end, 60 to 70% of our population and the world's population will get coronavirus. And we will achieve herd immunity with or without a vaccine. When Fauci, we're being conditioned because of this control of the flow of information. We're being conditioned, and the lockdowns, which are totally illegal and unconstitutional. We're being conditioned to kind of accept all this, except that more and more of us are not accepting it. Good for us. Quote, this is Fauci. That's one of the reasons why we have to make sure we engage the community is what we're doing now. Oh yeah, you sure are. To get community people to help us, for people to understand that we are doing everything we can to show that it's safe, he's talking about the vaccination, safe and it's effective, and that it's for the good of them as individuals and in society to take the vaccine. Yeah, you bet. And then he finished the interview. You're going to love these words, and it really gives you an insight to what's really going on. Quote, "There is a general anti-science, anti-authority, anti-vaccine feeling among some people in this country, an alarmingly large percentage of people, relatively speaking." Oh, really, Anthony? No kidding. No kidding. Yeah. By the way, in this breakdown of new cases, do you see any stats on how many cases involve illegal aliens coming across the borders illegally? No, you don't. You know why you don't? Because it's a huge percentage of the increase of cases, folks. Nobody's reporting on this whatsoever. The media, because they are controlling the flow of information, right? The media is saying that, well, any cases coming in from across our borders are green card holders and returning Americans from overseas. That is total BS. It's a total lie. A significant portion of the new cases being reported, never mind that portion of the new cases, which are people who already have the disease and have the antibodies, or people who have the disease and are asymptomatic, or people who are under 35 and have the disease and have like a, I think the death rate on them is somewhere around 0.00081. In other words, you are way more likely to fall down the steps or break your neck in terms of death. But let me give you some stats on what's really going on down at the U.S. border. And this is with immigration tamped way down from what it was. Okay, and this comes from Border Patrol agents working the border in Texas, Arizona, California. The new emergency regulations to control the spread of COVID-19 that the Border Patrol has been saddled with circumvents the requirement that was put into place about a year ago that they immediately return Mexican nationals to Mexico, sick or not. Now, anybody that comes across the border, if they're sick with COVID, they're taken to a nearby hospital, and then they are transported to a hospital more internal to the United States. And of course, their illness is counted as a quote-unquote new case. As a new case. Along with all the other, shall we say, drummed up counting of new cases. Quote, "Mexico's hospitals reportedly are overwhelmed. So huge numbers of them," this illegal infected aliens, "are coming to America just to seek medical attention. Agents are getting exposed and testing positive. An unknown number." I quote again, "Despite the pushback policy for Mexican citizens, some who cross illegally and evade apprehension can still make their way to hospitals. These getaways, as agents call them, often know where the hospitals are and understand they will not be turned away." Now, think about what's happening in California, where you have quote-unquote free health care for illegal aliens. They've had a huge influx. Let me give you some stats on this, because once again, with communication being, shall we say, screwed down, tampered with, interfered with, and blocked, you're not getting this whatsoever. Data from Texas shows that 17.4% of tested patients, that was 439 of 2518, by the way, quote, "were hospitalized patients in Texas in five trauma service areas abutting the Mexican border," unquote. Those people are then being transported to Houston area hospitals. And you've heard the wailing and crying about how, oh, there's a huge increase in hospitalization in Houston because of all the new cases. Well, gee, once again, there's no breakdown on the new cases. And there's not a mention of the fact that the majority of the hospital beds now being taken in Houston and other cities are illegal aliens who are COVID infected who are coming to the United States on purpose to get treatment and who are being transported from border area hospitals to internal hospitals like Houston. The intensive care unit, by the way, of one hospital in Houston, Texas Hospital Center, is at 100% capacity. 80% of the patients in that complete to capacity intensive care unit are illegal aliens, folks, using American tax dollars to get COVID treatment and taking up beds which American citizens ought to be lying in, or if needed, obviously. Between March 1 and May 30th, right, kind of the crux, the epicenter of this COVID nonsense, 74,382 illegals jumped the border with Mexico, and many of them were infected with COVID. I can't wait to see a breakdown of these quote-unquote new cases. Let's go back to our friend Mr. Fauci. Yes, our friend. As you know, Fauci has been casting draconian eyes and all sorts of nasty barbs at hydroxychloroquine. It may interest you to know that there are now more than 6,000 doctors worldwide who are using that as the go-to drug, along with the Z-Pak and along with zinc supplements, with a 91% complete success, sometimes a very quick success, as long as it's used early. Hydroxychloroquine as a prophylactic, that is, taken in advance, is being taken by tens of thousands of doctors and medical care workers in the United States and hundreds of thousands around the world with, they estimate, a 90% efficacy rate. In other words, if you start taking limited doses of hydroxychloroquine prior to exposure to COVID, the chances are 9.6 in 10 that you will not contract the disease. Yet the media, who is controlling the communication flow, you see how this all works? The media doesn't report on that. Instead, they report on Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci, who says there's no testing and it doesn't work and la-di-da-di-da, etc., etc. It may interest you to know hydroxychloroquine is the first choice of 78% of 6,000 doctors studied worldwide in a study that was just concluded. And, you know, our friends, the Democratic Communists, the No Lives Matter group, would really rather see folks die than folks think that there was an effective therapeutic drug. Because, you know, if there's an effective therapeutic drug, gee, you may not get the vaccine. And gee, you may open your business. And gee, you may go to whatever, XYZ game. And you may go to church. And you may break the stranglehold they are applying to communication. And you might not do what they say you need to do. Now, here's a really interesting thing for you. You know this remdesivir, and I might have mispronounced it, my apologies, you know what I'm talking about, which is being touted by Fauci as the end-all, be-all drug, way better than hydroxychloroquine. Actually, this drug is not proving to be effective at all. Did you know hydroxychloroquine costs $1 a dose? $1 a dose to produce. Did you know that a typical dosage of hydroxychloroquine at the retail level, in other words, you, is $30 a dose? Did you know that remdesivir, whatever it is, the ineffective drug that's being touted by Fauci and the press who is controlling the communication lanes. It's made by a company by the name of Gilead. And it's Remdesivir. How's that? Remdesivir. I'll pronounce it right here. You can tell I have kind of a mental block against this. Gilead is connected to an outfit called Wuxi, W-U-X-I, Aptech, which is financed by George Soros. Oh, my, what a coincidence. Wuxi Aptech is an international pharmaceutical, biopharmaceutical, and medical device company. I'll just use what Wikipedia says about this company. The company covers the development cycle through five core operations, including small molecule R&D and manufacturing, biologics R&D and manufacturing, cell therapy and gene therapy R&D and manufacturing, and medical device testing, and molecular testing and genomics. Wuxi Aptech, folks, is located in Shanghai, China. It was organized years ago by Dr. G. Li, L-I. It also now has facilities in Suzhou, S-U-Z-H-O-W, China. And it has facilities, thanks to Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, in St. Paul, Minnesota. Gee, what's going on in Minnesota? Philadelphia. Gee, what's going on in Philadelphia? And Atlanta. Huh, what's going on in Atlanta? Anyway, Gilead is also linked to an outfit called Unitaid. Unitaid. U-N-I-T-A-I-D. Unitaid is an outgrowth of the United Nations. Let's see, what outfit is linked in with... Oh, that's right, that's the WHO. W-H-O. Friends with China, and friends with Fauci, and friends with Gates, and friends with Soros. My, it's amazing how all this stuff is linked. In fact, the largest investors in Unitaid include the WHO itself, George Soros, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and a partnership relationship with Clinton Health Access, which, by the way, is part of the Clinton Foundation. We know, I've talked ad infinitum about them. I'm not going to talk about them now. By the way, both Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx are also associated with the Clinton Health Initiative I just talked about. Dr. Fauci has worked with Gilead forever. Now, here's what's really interesting. I gave you the prices. The cost, $1. The price per dose at the retail level, $30 for hydroxychloroquine, which is proven more than 95% effective as a prophylactic and 91% effective as a therapeutic drug if administered early. The price of manufacturing for Remdesivir is $9 a dose. Do you know how much Gilead is selling Remdesivir, whatever, the drug that doesn't work, the globalist drug? You know how much they're selling it for, folks? You know what the retail price to you is? $3,000. $3,000. Did you know that China has begun, through Wuxi, mass producing the drug, and they began mass producing it back in February? Gee, but the clinical studies, quote unquote, were just finished a few weeks ago. And Dr. Fauci has told us that without a clinical study, you know, hydroxychloroquine, you just can't be sure of the efficacy of a drug. But they were mass manufacturing this drug in February without a clinical trial. And Dr. Fauci is now touting it at a markup. Think about this. If you have, I'm going to round numbers, $10 cost and a $3,000 price tag at a markup of 2,900%, This is the drug that's being touted. With the money all going to China and a Chinese company in which are invested all the globalist cabal. And the profits from the deal going to both the Chinese company and to the Chinese Communist Party. Huh. Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. Gilead, by the way, admits that the drug will cost $520 per vial, or $3,120 for a 6-vial treatment. Even Gilead is admitting a 500% markup. Actually, it's much larger than that. All right. We're going to talk more about this this border situation with COVID spiking. I'm going to give you a couple of quick quotes because this is all tied in, folks. Okay, the remdesivir, the downplaying of hydroxychloroquine, the control of the flow of information to and between various groups. In Arizona, which of course the press, because they control the information lanes, is jumping up and down about early opening, and this is the reason, and blah, 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 blah. 12,032 of the state's 54,000 cases reported this past week are in the border cities of Yuma and Nogales, which are, by the way, the biggest hotspots in the state. Yuma County, positive COVID cases have tripled from 1289 to 4591 since June 1. Pima County, 5,587 cases this week compared to 187 on June 1. 90% plus of these quote-unquote new cases, folks, are infected illegal aliens. Infected illegal aliens. And by the way, the same thing is happening in Texas. And the same thing, let me give you some stats. Trauma services helping people who are severely affected with COVID-19 doubled to 886 of the state's 3,711 hospitalizations in the past week. That doesn't count how many were transported from these border stations to internal hospitals such as Houston, the stats I gave you a little bit earlier. We're going to talk more about that next week. In concert with this control of information and communication is a control of youth and education. Do you remember what Sheila Lee Jackson do you remember what she talked about in her rant on reparations? I just went over it with you. The 200 years beginning from 1619. Did you know that the New York Times has a program, 1619 program, which is an educational program, which is now being introduced in schools across the United States, K-1 through K-12. I don't even need to tell you what the program is, right? The program is the original sin, America is flawed, America needs to be torn down, racial justice for all, redistribution of wealth, masked under the name of reparations, etc. This is what your kids are being taught. It's called the 1619 Project. Do you see how well coordinated all this stuff is? Sheila Lee Jackson's rant using 1619 as the beginning date for when slaves weren't paid for labor. The New York Times putting together this educational curriculum, which is kind of an offshoot of Common Core, called the 1619 Project. It's all tied in. And they control the communication. And they control the communication between between educators and the unions. The unions are part of the cabal, the teachers' unions. And the teachers' unions are pushing for the 16-19 dealy bob. And look, if you still don't believe it, if you're still scratching your head, let me tell you that Black Lives Matter, we'll call them No Lives Matter, has now jumped into bed with the teachers' unions. That's right. Black Lives Matter has now infiltrated and has linked arms with the teachers' unions to promote this 16-19 curriculum. The New York Times 16-19 Project, folks, which is being taught at the K-12 schools and public universities, basically controls what is taught. It is an extension of the control of the flow of communications you are seeing in general society. This is the control of the flow of information and communication at the K-12 and university level. You're going to love this, okay? A radical socialist who spoke at a National Socialist Convention last year has now taken over the head of the teachers' union in Los Angeles. That's the nation's second largest school district. Her name is Cecily, that's C-E-C-I-L-Y, Myert Cruz. She is a major player in the Black Lives Matter movement. And she intends, and she's getting it done, to force the LA school system to, should we say, bow to Black Lives Matter demands. Let me quote, remember, she is now the head of the teachers' union and a member of Black Lives Matter. Let me quote Myert Cruz. Quote, "We need to have a set of demands that dovetail with Black Lives Matter. We have to have massive political education. People will say not all police are bad, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about racism as a social construct, systemic and institutional racism. And wrapped on top is white supremacist culture, which is the dominant culture. So as educators, how are we going to equip ourselves to become anti-racist? Not for ourselves, but for our students. We serve a school district with a 90% free and reduced lunch student population. We have to move the needle. It's imperative to move the needle around racial and social justice. I see teaching as a revolutionary act, just the way I see organizing." Here's a scary thing, folks. She was elected president of the union by a vote of the union members. She got 69% of the vote of the LA school teachers union. Does that kind of tell you how big a problem we have with communications, the flow of communications, the control of information, and education? In other words, what you are seeing happening in the streets, which is a product of education, communication, information control over the last 40 years while we were asleep at the switch, is the tip of the iceberg toward what's coming. The tip of the iceberg to what's coming. Teachers have been trained by radical leftists for the last 30 years. They are now teaching our kids and our grandkids. They have a disdain for America. There was a YouGov poll recently. 46% of younger Americans don't believe America is a great country. 38% don't believe America is the greatest country in the world. And 84%, listen to this, 84% don't know all the rights enshrined in the First Amendment of the Constitution, which is what, folks? Free speech, the right to communicate, the right to disseminate information. Do you understand the totality of the stranglehold that the left and all their associated allies, international and national, are trying to put on things? At every level of society. And so far, they are regrettably succeeding, as that poll would tell you. Along with that, we have a huge shift in demographics going on. This will be the first election in which baby boomers are not the most numerous voting bloc. Millennials will be the most numerous voting bloc. Not by much, but it's the first time in our history that the baby boomer generation does not outnumber all other voting blocs. But there's other things going on too. And it's all tied in with the stuff I'm talking about today on this July 4th. For the first time, non-whites and Hispanics are a majority of people under age 16 in the year 2019. That's the first time. Excuse me. That demographic shift, folks, is going to grow over the coming years. Quote, U.S. Census Bureau, we are browning from the bottom up in our age structure. This is William Frey, by the way, at the Brookings Institute. This is going to be a diversified century for the United States, and it's beginning with this youngest generation. The number of white people in the United States has gotten smaller over the past decade. Deaths surpass births. Think about Planned Parenthood. Think about contraception. Think about the indoctrination because of the control of information and communication into why people, particularly white people, should limit the amount of offspring they have. You know, environmental concerns and financial concerns and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And think about it in the context of open borders and anchor babies and all those things that create the refugee programs that create a massive influx, in many cases, of younger non-white people. Think about that in the context, this younger generation of non-white people who are now being taught by teachers who come from unions like the LA Teachers Union, who's run by this avowed socialist Marxist Black Lives, no Lives Matter person. Do you see the totality of the picture here of the plan which is being implemented? I want to talk more next week about this shift in demographics because it's huge and it's major. But I want to keep this show shorter than normal at the request of stations and because it's July 4th. So let me end. I'm just going to skip a few of these things here. By the way, did you know there's another virus, the swine flu virus, a genetic mutant from the 2009 swine flu that's beginning to bubble in China? I'll tell you more about that next week, too, because that may be a problem. You know, if COVID isn't scary enough, they got to come up with something else. You understand how this all works. I want to close with two things. Number one, I want you folks to have just the greatest July 4th you've ever had, despite all this nonsense. My personal opinion is, you know, the governors of your state do not have the legal or constitutional right to tell you squat, period. You are smart people. You are Americans with rights and a constitution, at least thus far. Hopefully, we'll be able to keep it. And you do whatever you feel is right. Please take into account the safety of others. Because of that 0.00435 minutesimal death rate, 80% of it is in a certain age group or a certain medical class factor of people. You know, they probably don't need to come with you unless they choose to, and you need to be kind of careful of them. Just like if you had the flu. You're not going to go visit grandma when you're coughing, hacking, wheezing, and vomiting with the flu. So, the same should be true for COVID. But in terms of what you do, you make your own decisions. I don't know about you, but I am fed up with being told what to think, or in my case, trying to be told what to think, what to do, what not to do, what you can do, what you can't do, what to wear, what not to wear. I mean, they can all kiss my butt. And hopefully you feel the same. Because next week we're going to talk about what happens and what our responsibilities are and what our decisions will be if the unthinkable happens. That is, the Democratic Communists with their Islamists, media, and globalist, not to mention international, allies get control of all three branches of government. You're going to have some big decisions to make, folks. This is the time to start thinking about them. The second thing I will tell you is please go to the politics section of the website, ontherightsideradio.com, and send some money to your candidates. I think we have several 5X, 4X, 3X matching contribution things going on. That's a lot of bang for your buck. The way those contributions work, if you send in 50 bucks, I'm taking a number, send in 10, send in 100, send in 1,000, whatever's good for you. But send in something. If you send in 50 bucks, $300 gets paid to your candidate. It's really almost a 6-to-1. It's 5X plus your contribution. Do it. We are 120, give or take, days away from an election, which is going to have a major, let me underline this, let me bold it, let me italicize it, let me capitalize it, a major impact on your life and an incredible impact on the lives of your children, your grandchildren, and their children. This is a big deal, and we're behind the eight ball. We have been cut off from one another intentionally. We have been cut off from our associations, groups, and communities intentionally. We are being cut off from our leaders intentionally. Therefore, folks, let's go back to the American credo. If you want a hand, you look at the end of your arm. We are self-reliant individuals. Gather the information. Understand the knowledge. Make a decision and act. Remember that the failure to act is an act. I wish you and this incredible country of ours a tremendous July 4th weekend. Stay safe. Have fun. Do what you think is right. Exercise your rights as Americans. And do your thing. Because I sure as hell am. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.